I'm sorry I scared you. That I was a little bit late. I was running around like a chicken with my head cut off, I said, to get in here. We had family over today, thank goodness. That was my husband's family from Alaska. So fun. And they left and I crashed. So now here I am, ready to talk about alcoholism and a little bit about how I got where I am and how I feel and what I've experienced in that amount of time. So, that's a long time though, 44 minutes or something. Okay. Well, somebody holler if it's time to stop. My name is Dara Vasquez, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And I have been recovered since February 8th of 1989. And I can't tell you, there are no words to express how much gratitude I feel for that. And since gratitude is an action word, how much I try to put in action for that gift I've been given. It's an incredible thing. I'm gonna try to tell you, but it really is a difficult if you're an alcoholic like I was, and now you're not, and it's still going on. It's just never ending amazement. I had my first drink when I was 15. I wasn't, well adjusted to this life at all. Never really felt like I was. I had a good upbringing. I lived with my grandma till I was five, and she taught me a lot about God and the Bible and gave me a good foundation on right and wrong and all that. And then, excuse me. I experienced some life and really got off track and really got lost and scared in just the time that from 5 to 15. And I really had decided that it just wasn't worth living. My home life was tough. Everything to me was tough. And so I had decided that I would have to commit suicide. And I was out on my mother's back of my mother's car thinking about it, how I was going to do it, how it was going to be, what was going to happen. And it was going to be, I was going to wait 2 weekends. And I don't know, I'm not usually a planner, but I was planning that. So I felt so at ease and so at peace with that decision, though. And I thought that, there's two things I want to do before I go. One of them is I want to take a drink of alcohol because I'd promised my grandmother I never would. She was her dad was a terrible alcoholic, and this was back in the day before Alcoholics Anonymous and before any sort of treatments or anything existed for alcoholism. And he lived in the back of the farm, beautiful farmhouse he had built with his own hands. And they pretty much had to keep him contained there to save him from himself. And that I knew that about alcoholism, and I knew that my biological father was an alcoholic, and I knew that they weren't good. So I went ahead and took the drink. I was dating a guy at 15 who was a musician, so it was no problem. And it was cherry sloe gin, and they passed it around the table. And three of those people they passed to are no longer here because of alcoholism now. And that's a shame. But I'm still here, and I still know why I'm here. I took the drink and everything changed. I had a psychic change. I did not need to die. I did not need to feel bad. It kind of leveled me out. It really, really saved my life at the time. That's why I don't really care about you know, I think alcohol saved my life. So I'm not going to say, oh, it's the worst thing in the world. Can be. It can be. But anyway, it wasn't for me at 15. Excuse me. I thought, I need more of that. I need to find out how to get more of that. And I need to do it in a way that keeps me supplied so that I can keep on existing. And the other thing we're not going to talk about, but I was a 15-year-old girl, and you can only imagine. And all of that to say that from then on, alcohol was my savior. It was my go-to. It helped me be able to function at school, not just function, but feel like I thought everybody looked. And if I didn't feel good or on top of the world, at least I could function in a way that that protected me, it seemed like. And I drank steady, hard, fast, as much as I could, as long as I could. And that was, I got married at 17, had a baby, sweet girl, woman, grown, and then divorced and remarried, had another baby. And all of that time, alcohol was my what, friend, my everything to me. I couldn't imagine a life without alcohol, and that was unheard of. And so I started having trouble that alcohol brings, depression, and oh gosh, just, you know, horrible feelings about myself because I couldn't say what I mean and mean what I say. I couldn't show up when I said I would show up, and just really tough to be, started being tougher and tougher to be me again. And I couldn't stop. I was what, 20, I remember at 27, not being able to, and drinking all day. Now I'm drinking all day. Now I'm waking up and drinking all night. I think that alcoholics die in their back bedroom with their families keeping the door locked. I don't know there's an Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know that there's a way to be free from alcoholism. I have no way of knowing that. My life, I mean, there wasn't a lot of outstanding or not outstanding things going on. I did what most women do who have kids, have a nice house, have cars, own a business. I did those sorts of things. But inside, I was just self-destructing. And it's a lonely, sad place to be, and it's a suffocating place to be. So, oh, there's Sherry. Anyway, that was terrible. I hated it. I knew it. I hated it. And I got to where I knew I couldn't stop. I mean, I wasn't silly enough to think, oh, well, I'm just going to put a stop to this. You know, like you do smoking if you've ever smoked. I could quit smoking, and I love smoking, but I could quit. But alcohol, I wasn't dumb enough to say, oh yeah, I think I'll just cut back or something. I knew that that was not within my power. I knew that pretty soon. So I was 41 in my back bedroom, not able to get out of bed, crawling to the bathroom, which was by the, you know, by the bed, sort of, to make it to be sick, pancreatitis, liver trouble, you've got to stop. I hear you. Yes, I know I've got to stop. What does that mean? How do you do that? And sounds like it might really help, but I just didn't have a clue how to do that. Alcohol had never been anything to me but a lifesaver. So it was hard to see it another way, and harder yet to stop or to even back off a little bit. And I would wake up. I got to where I knew I was saw a shrink in the middle of all that. And Lord knows the labels that were put on me during that time, because now I think about them and I think, good grief, that's kind of scary. But it wasn't scary then. I knew it was the alcohol, and I didn't have the wherewithal to admit it because I didn't want the doctors trying to make me stop. I knew I couldn't. I knew I couldn't live without it. I'd been without it, and I found that, and then I lived. So I was practicing when I would wake up or come to during the night. I'd practice, who's the president and what day is today? And the morning, and I looked out my window, I would often look out, and I would see it was 2 o'clock. I didn't know if that was 2 o'clock night or morning. I mean, excuse me, morning or afternoon. I didn't know the difference, because if I just looked at the clock, I could not tell. And so, because I was just in such a stupor, and also lots of medication to try to even out the insanity, not the insanity of the obsession, but the depression and the damage I was doing by continuing to pour alcohol on mental depression. So I didn't know the president, and I didn't know what day it was. And I thought, yeah, who cares? So what? And then I just went on until I couldn't anymore. And I say that because a lot of my life seems like I was just going along and then plop, I was somewhere else. Going along and then plop, I was somewhere else. And this was, I was plopped at an AA meeting. Now, I really thought it was my sister's doing. I know who plopped me on that one, but I didn't know all that stuff before. There would just be some radical change in my life. And there I was trying to cope or adjust to that. So I wound up in an AA meeting. I was drunk. I had booze in my car. I had promised her I would go, or she was going to call the doctor. I don't even know what that meant. I don't know what she meant. She was going to call the doctor. I have no idea, but it didn't sound good. So when I went in the door, there was a woman who met me there. God bless her soul. And she took over. She was like a little army sergeant. She would talk into my ear, and it was very loud. And I don't know if you've ever come out of any anesthetic from any kind of operation or anything, but you know how when you don't wake up, they'll get right in your ear and talk to you so that you'll get away. And that's what she did. And she was the only one I could hear. And she asked me if I had a desire to stop drinking. And I said, I do not have a desire to stop drinking. And she said, sat there for a little while. The meeting went on. And in a little bit, she said, let me ask you something. If I could show you a way to live and you could stop drinking, would you be interested? I said, yeah, I'd be interested in a way to live, but not stopping drinking. But I can show you how to live without it. And I remember she had 4 years, and I thought she was telling a big fat lie, because I could not imagine Because alcohol was all there was to me. If you're like me, everything centered around alcohol. Everything, success, failure, good, bad, people, alone, all of it centered around alcohol. So just to sit there and think that somebody had not had a drink in 4 years, it was inconceivable. Inconceivable. But I thought, that thing about showing me how to live, I'd like to at least get a couple of things in my repertoire where I could say more than hello or get out of my room or whatever it was that was going on then. So she began to take me under her wing, and I just got off everything. I mean, I just stopped. It's a wonder that I made it through, because there was medication, there was, the all kinds of stuff, and the booze itself. I was drinking so much at that time. And she said, I told her I had to go. She said, "Do you have booze in the car, don't you?" I said, "Yes, I do." She said, "No, I want you to go pour it out, come back." I never poured out alcohol in my life. That's the power of Alcoholics Anonymous. I went outside, poured the booze out. Can't believe it. And came back in and told her I'd done it. And I said, "But what you don't get is this is all well and good. And I've been, what, 45 minutes now without a drink, which is wonderful." Some people come in are a lot smarter than I am and come in a lot sooner, but I was not. She said, I said, "But I'm going to leave here, and there's no way I get up in the night and drink, and I don't even know it. I mean, I just do it. I mean, that's just, I wake up, I drink to go back to bed, to go back to sleep, I mean." And so she said, "No, it's not going to happen tonight." And she said, "I want you to, when you go to bed, just get in bed normally, get on your knees, and I want you to ask God to keep you sober tonight." I was trying to remember if she asked me if I believed in God at that point. I don't think she did. I think she just told me to do that. And she was such a forceful woman. And I said, "That'll never work for me. I must be in the wrong place. That's not going to work." And she said, "Just do it. Call me in the morning. Do not get out of bed on your feet. Roll out of bed on your knees and thank God for keeping you sober." And I thought, this most optimistic person I've ever met in my life. So I just thought, well, I go home, I do what she said. I mean, still amazed that I hadn't, but I still amazed. And when I woke up in the morning, it still brings tears to my eyes that I woke up and could not believe. And it was, I had experienced it, and I could not believe I had not taken a drink. I had to check myself. Did I get up? Did I go in there when I went to the bath? Is it under my bed? I was looking all around. I had, by God, gone all night and somehow slept, I guess, or passed out from all the years before. And I rolled out on my knees and said, "Thank you, God." And I really didn't, it was the mechanics of doing that convinced me, because I was, as dead inside as I could get. I couldn't get any deader, or I would have been. So I went but right back up there. She told me to come back up. And I stayed at that Alcoholics Anonymous group for almost 5 years. I became secretary up there. I went 90 meetings. I did all of the stuff that I was made, I guess, all of it that I was told to do. I do not, I have to insert here, I do not think that I wouldn't have stayed sober had there been another scenario involved. I'm just telling you my personal story. And my personal story was that helped because the drugs that had been, the shrink drugs that I had been taking, my thought process was just, I couldn't put a sentence together. And I remember they'd go eat and have coffee after the meeting, and I would try to join in. You know, I'm sure I had something wonderful to say. But by the time I honestly could get a sentence finished, which is hard to believe today, by the time I could hardly get a sentence finished, they were on another subject. And I couldn't say it because it was yesterday's news. They were all talking about something else by then. So I told her, I said, I don't know, I think I've damaged my brain forever. And she said, well, you probably did, but, you know, maybe not. And she told me it took 5 years to get this one particular drug out of my brain for memory and for stuff like that, memory and all. So I believed her. I just did. And by God's grace, I continued up there, and when I began working up there as secretary, you know, I got to listen to a lot of women, talk to a lot of women, alcoholics and all that. There wasn't a lot of step work, and there wasn't a lot of, you know, big book going on there. I love them, and I'm glad that they babysat me for all that time because I needed babysitting. And I was talking to this lady one time at the desk, and she was telling me about her kid or something. And a friend walked by, and he said, Dara, I hear you talking about this, about confession, and it's good to talk about what's bothering people. He said, but then you got to repent. You got to change. It's like, get out of here. Who even asked you? I wasn't sure what that meant. Had to look it up. Sounded right. You know how when you hear something, you're like, uh-oh, I knew there was something I was missing. And so I know that person still today, and I'm forever grateful for that. God has put some wonderful teachers in my life. So that was about the end of that stint. I had a wonderful sponsor there afterwards, and this new sponsor had you make amends, and she did not believe in living amends, which the other sponsor did. So she said, well, she's not sponsoring me anymore. I am. And okay. But I didn't understand yet what that even meant. I did not read it in the book. And it wasn't as if people weren't talking about the steps or the words in the book. They were. I heard them. But, you know, I didn't do it. It wasn't my way to go. So there was a guy that was coming up there, and he was giving a big book study. And everybody said, don't go to that meeting. Don't go to that meeting. All he talks about is the big book. That's all he cares about. And of course, don't go to that meeting. That had my interest piqued. And I thought, who the heck, and what do they care if that's what? And it was Cliff Bishop, who became my sponsor for years and years. So I went to his meeting, you know, and then, I mean, I'm telling you, there would be like two of us in there. And shortly thereafter, I don't know. You know, I told you about plunking me places. God plunked me into primary purpose group. And I still was finishing up my work stint at Aquarius, but I was going to primary purpose as well. And I had really moved over to Primary Purpose because it was a small group at the time. There were about two or three women in there. Cliff had started it. I liked his big book. I liked his what he was saying out of it. I got what he was saying out of it. And I guess I was able to hear at this point. And so I move over there to the Midway Hills Church in Dallas, move my AA membership there. And there were no 90 meetings in 90 days. There were no, friendly chats. There was go through the steps, do what the book says word by word, take another person through, get another one, go carry the message. I mean, it was that. And instead of me losing interest in a spiritual development, it really lit my fire, because I didn't want to just be sober anymore and listen to and have and mess around with only problems and pitiful alcoholism. I just had just about had it with that. And I didn't even realize it. God intervened before I even had a chance to really express what was going on with me. So I go over to Primary Purpose Group, and they had a foundation meeting, and Cliff did it. And I found out all about the allergy. I still believe in the, some people don't care. I do. I believe I have it. I believe I have the allergy to alcohol, because taking one sip, I'm a goner. I can't taste it and not want more. Yeah, he pretty much convinced me in a couple of those foundation meetings of who I was, what I was, and what my job now was. And talked about the obsession of the mind, how even if I didn't take a drink for a while, that I would always come back to that thought of this time it'll be different, this time the allergy won't kick in. I didn't know it was an allergy, but this time it won't be like it's been last time. The obsession will always come back and tell me it's different. This is the solution. And I got to see that when I began working with other people. Not only could I recognize it in my own life, but man, it started becoming crystal clear in my life. And when it would crop up in my life and try to sneak in the side or whatever. And I began to get more and more familiar with the nature of the disease of alcoholism. And in the meantime, I'm staying very busy learning how to give away this new recovery that I had found, this new way to live without depression, without worrying about being alcoholic and having to be treated a certain way and not go places and not listen to certain, just so many things. And I feel so bad for the people who now have, and if you're one, I'm not talking about that. If it works for you, then I'm so glad. I'm just telling about me today. And I just couldn't do that. I just couldn't watch out enough to keep enough distance to protect me from alcohol. I had to have something that was built in, that was reliable. And I was told through this and through the big book, reading it, that it was a spiritual experience. How do you do that? Can I do it? You know, there are a lot of people in a lot of places who love God, serve God, do God all the time. AA is one, you know, although I will say not everyone who comes to AA is there to get sober. So let me just throw that out there because I thought they were, I really did. But it's just interesting. And it's just interesting. So you live and you learn. But I don't think that I would have been able to have settled for anything less than this huge power greater than alcohol. And I already knew alcohol was a great power in my life. I wouldn't say I liked it, wouldn't say I wanted it, but it was there, like it or lump it. And so the way to face it and walk through it became my goal, or my challenge, my whatever it is. And the steps that I went through provided an environment in my heart for God to come in there and change me. And what he did was, I know what I was going to read y'all. Okay, here we go. He says, you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. I've never seen one single case recover where that state of mind existed to the extent that it does in you. He said to the doctor, is there no exception? Yes, replied the doctor, there is. Exceptions to cases such as yours have been occurring since early times. Here and there, once in a while, alcoholics have had what are called vital, life-giving, spiritual experiences. To me, these occurrences are phenomena. This is a shrink trying to help. They appear to be in the nature of huge emotional displacements and rearrangements, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which were once the guiding force of the lives of these men, are suddenly cast to one side, and a completely new set of conceptions and motives begin to dominate them. I thought, that's what I need. That's what I need right there. Now, they say they really don't know how to do it, but I did know that Cliff said that we'll provide an environment. Actually, Bob is on set at first, but anyway, we'll provide an environment for God to change you, and you'll have all those things change, and you don't really do it. You don't really like read the book, The Power of Changing Your Mind, or get up in the morning and do X, Y, Z. What you do is go through this with me, be as honest as you can, get through it, and then he didn't say this part, but he should have. And then I'm going to work you half to death because I'm going to send you so many, because you're a sick little puppy. And I loved it. And that's what he did. And oh gosh, those early days at PPG when the group was building, and Myers and I first went at what I remember was to Homeward Bound. And we, you know, they were all caught up in there. They couldn't leave. So that was good. And we'd do steps 1, 2, and 3. He'd always make me do step 3 because he liked talking about the 1 and 2. And also I always got in trouble about, you know, people would get mad when I would talk about God. So I said, thanks a lot, Myers. But I'm glad he did because it helped me learn. It helped him learn. We didn't know what we were doing. We were only doing what the book said. We knew it somehow in acting those things out. It was becoming our own. And people went with us. And then there was a Salvation Army stint and the Homeward Bound stint I did. I did that for years, Homeward Bound. And several women, many women, finally, after the group started growing and everything, they would all come. it would almost be woman per woman for the Salvation Army meeting and the women who came to carry the message. Those women were staying sober. They were taking care of their kids. They were working their jobs. And the most important part was that spiritual experience that had been opened up to us, the here and now, taking care of what's here right now and being present, was opening up. And it was opening up more and more to all of us as we continued. And I took as many as I could through the steps. I would not say no if you wanted to go through the steps. I just couldn't say no. I love women alcoholics. I can be in a room full of 10 million people, and I'll walk straight up to the ones who are hurting like I was. And I just know. I can't even explain it, but it's true. And I'm thankful for that. I'm really thankful for that. A lot of it has to do with gratitude. And a lot of it, I think, has to do with taking it right down to the death trap door. You know, I can usually connect with anybody in between, too, because I was in between, but I did not stop there. I kept going, 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 going. And I'm very fortunate to be here and have a brain and not slobbering all over myself, although I did kind of slobber my water a while ago, but that's all right. It was an accident. And I don't know what else to, I want to say some more about sponsorship. I want to say more about Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. I think I was at Primary Purpose for many years, and then Cliff got sick, and the group changed after that, as all groups do. We should change. It's good. It's good. And then COVID came, and new groups started popping up all over. I went to my friend's group the other day, who started in a park right after COVID, and it's still going strong. So God has made good things happen for those changes that seemed like, why would we want to change this? We're all just stuck in here, hipping people, doing what we're supposed to be doing. But change was right and good. God knows what he's doing. That's another thing I've had to learn, is trust. You know, if we read this book once or 5 million times, I think we're going to come up with the very same conclusion. Trust him. Trust him. How do I do that today? How do I do that in my life today? Well, it doesn't mean thinking about me. It doesn't mean putting me first. It means putting you first. My problem was, before the steps and the environment that was created, I didn't have a clue how. There was just a bunch of words floating around. I couldn't consistently do it. And I didn't know what it meant to put, you know, we have a mental disease, the obsession, we have physical and the allergy, and spiritual disease I have. And I have to treat the spirit first. They just told me I got to have Dr. Young, got to have a spiritual experience to overpower all this other stuff, not the other way around, which it seems like to all of us when we first come in. And then after we've been here a while, we get distracted. And it seems like, oh, no, no, no. I'll just get this taken care of, this world thing taken care of, and then I will come over here and do this spirit stuff. And it does not work like that. Trust me, if you're trying it, go back. I think that Alcoholics Anonymous has saved many people's lives. I think it's so important for us who have had the absolute grace and received it and are still sober today and walk through so much just regular life stuff, I think it's hugely important that we give that to the people who are coming along. I know especially the women, they're still with the babies, they're still with the kids, they're still wanting to do better and can't because of alcoholism. And it is my joy to be able to tell them that it's simple, not easy, but then continually teach and show and act out in my life that the Spirit comes first. I can't cure anything without God intervening. I can't even accept. I am surrendered to His power. And it's not, it doesn't take that long, knock on wood, for me to remember that. I had some juicy things happen to me in sobriety. I mean, that first, when I first came in, I went through a divorce and my daughters were grown, and it was horrible, 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 horrible. I hate it. I feel bad for anybody who has to do that, who goes through that. After that, I had, that was tough. The last thing, I guess, my sister got sick with cancer, and instead of, worrying about or whatever, I was able to be with her, hold her hand, love her, and it was the joy of my life. I mean, I'm so thankful for being able to do that. And that was an experience that, a rich experience that I would not want anybody to miss. And it sounds like that's weird, but it's true. It's really true. That's where all the good stuff is. I also went into the hospital to have a retina exam. I mean, little tiny surgery they were going to do on the back of my eye. And 10 days later, I come out and they've had to take my eye out. And I was just so glad to get, to get through it and then get back home. But, used to, or if I didn't know what I know because of AA, if I didn't have it implanted deeply, a foundation in me, I don't know how people do that. It with or without alcohol, I have no idea how you do that if you don't already have, if He hasn't provided a strong link for you to depend on and to rely on and to know it's not an accident. This is what you're here to do. Now let's go. And I'm glad to do it. I know it sounds odd, but it is. And it's not all traumatic stuff either. I mean, it's wonderful stuff, like seeing your grandkid move. It's gonna make me cry too. Seeing your grandkid who came in and you picked up at the hospital of an overdose of alcohol and drugs, moved to Hungary with her husband and 5 kids as a missionary. And by the way, when I picked her up from the hospital, you know what she said to me? I said, "You're going to AA." She said, "Okay." And she said, "Well, I'll tell you this, I will never become a missionary." I went, "Ooh, I don't know about that." So God's good. He gives me little hints about what He's going to perform and the works He's going to perform. And I say, "Oh, you just keep saying that. I don't think you'll have to." But they do. They always do. One of them said, "Oh, I can't be a doctor. I've already had everything taken away. There's no way. The state won't let me. The law won't let me." And I thought, oh, girl, you better get back to those books. You're going to be working soon. And sure enough, she was. It was a little path back to being a OBGYN. So if I could even begin to tell you and the little and big things that have happened to me in my life in sobriety, it sounds like a rich, happy, full life. And all I ever wanted was to stop drinking just for a little bit, just so I could get just one step up on everything that was crashing in on me. I'm working with a gal now that she called me again and she'd been out and now she's back in. I think it is very difficult. I don't know how you guys do it. And if you have any tips, I'd love to hear them because I love to sponsor. I love people getting a spiritual experience and staying in the moment and getting the benefits of all these gifts. But it's difficult, I think, over Zoom. I try. Maybe it's just me. But anyway, I love it. I do it. And it's really God's business to do the results anyway. But I'm kind of a helicopter sponsor, I guess, at least at Primary Purpose Group, when I could see and be with the people. So now I'm doing it a little looser, and that's working fine. I'm sure the women like it better, and they're doing just fine, by the way, without my help. But as long as they're doing those simple little things, they're learning to trust God. Because if somebody tells me and did, you're going to have to trust God. You're going to have to let go and let God. You're going to have to just lean on Him. What? I don't know what that means. That I have no connection to those words. So in doing this, the words have matched my experience, and that's what's made of mine, is by continuing to not choose the world and continuing when it's really tough and seems so much tougher to choose the Spirit. I have been able to enjoy, I don't know what to tell you. I'm still here. I love it. Laugh a lot. I think I'm a very bad wife. I still need to learn how to do that. But I'm doing okay. I mean, I don't try. That's right. My friend told me today, he said, don't talk about you try. Talk about you let God. So I let God run my marriage today. I really don't need to run anything. I've done it the very best of my ability. And my personal life, my love, and all the things that matter to me, I ran them right in the ground. So one more day, I'm going to keep up with it. And whoa, I am a blubbermouth. Okay. I love you guys, and I can't tell you how much I thank you for listening. Some stuff worked it out for me tonight. Yay!